Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, this is Justine Rotolo. I'm also known as Miss ADD. We've been off for a while, so welcome back to everybody who's listening today. And I want to tell everyone how excited I am about our guest that we have on. Her name is Melissa Orlov, and she is the author of The ADHD Effect on Marriage and also Couples Guide to Thriving with ADHD. She's a world-known expert on ADHD and relationships. So without further ado, I want to bring Melissa on.
Hi, Justine.
Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So, Melissa, I thought we might start off with you just talking a little bit about how you got into writing books about relationships and ADHD, and just walk us through a little bit of that history, if you would.
Well, we started dealing with ADHD in my family a long time ago because my daughter, who is now 25, was diagnosed with it in third grade. But we did not put together that my husband also has ADHD until much later than that, because nobody really thinks about, well, if you have a child with ADD, you also may very well have an adult with ADHD in the family since it's so hereditary. But anyway, we had been struggling for quite a while in our relationship, and my husband and I were, we sort of came out the other end of that struggle and looked at each other and said, wow, we had no idea. Once he was diagnosed and we started taking care of that, seeing how much that really helped us, what an impact it made. And luckily, I happened to be working with Dr. Ned Halliwell and Dr. John Rady at the time that we were going through all of the exploration of what the heck was going on in our relationship. And so I was learning
wow.
all about ADHD. And so very fortuitous. And we came out the other side and we said, a lot of people would benefit from this information. And so I started writing a blog about it. And then the blog was so popular that I decided that in order for people to actually get good information, I should write some books. So I wrote the books as a way of organizing the thousands of pages that were on the blog, essentially. And so it's all sort of dynamic. I then started giving seminars, and I speak all over the world now and teach therapists
wow.
about it. It's, so it's been a progression.
So do you see people that are couples with ADHD? I mean, do you do that kind of work as well?
I do counsel couples with ADHD, though I do it by phone. I don't actually see them, which is a little bit of a different kind of a practice. And I work with couples from all over the world. So I think that, I can't take on that many people, individual couples, but I do give seminars so that more people can get access to the information. And during the seminars, I try to answer everybody's questions.
Can you tell everybody who's listening how they would find out about your seminars?
Oh, sure. Happy to. The website is www.adhdmarriage.com. And I actually have a seminar starting soon. I give 3 times a year. I give an 8-week seminar, which couples find extremely helpful.
Wow.
try to be very balanced between partners who have ADD and partners who don't. Which is
right.
usually a big relief for the people who have the ADD because they're used to being beat up on. That's not the way it should work, in my opinion.
No.
It doesn't work very well.
Where is your
anyway.
Seminar that's coming up?
It's by phone. I give it by conference call so that people can call in.
Oh, okay. Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah,
great.
So you can do it from home or from your office or whatever. It's in the evenings. And then I record it as well while I'm giving it, because part of what's really useful for couples, actually, people think they're that they have problems that nobody else has when they struggle with ADHD, and that's actually not the case at all. In fact, one of the reasons my books have been so popular is that the patterns that ADHD introduces are extremely predictable, And, you know, lots and lots of people who have ADHD in their relationship struggle from exactly the same thing that you do. And so hearing the questions, the live Q&A and the seminar is really enlightening for a lot of people. It's like, oh, my gosh, I'm not alone.
That's great.
It's really useful, yeah. So people who can't make a call or live in England or something like that, they listen to the recording the next day or something. So
that's a great idea. That's very helpful. It really is. So, you know, you and I were emailing back and forth, and I just wanted to go through some of these issues that I think would be very important for people who are listening, because I'm an ADD coach. I have ADD, and I'm married to somebody with ADD, but it works very well for us because it's the third marriage. So we're both pretty much adults, and we take responsibility for our stuff, which is just great. But there's a lot of people out there, a lot of people who are struggling with one being ADHD, the other one not, or both together. And so I guess the first thing is, what are the signs that a couple might be impacted by ADHD?
Well, so if you happen to be lucky enough to know that you yourself do have ADHD, then the chances are better than not that there is an impact of some sort. To wit, you're on your third marriage, so there is likely impacts previously.
Oh, yes.
But there are some things. So either knowing you have ADD or having a child with ADD is an indicator that something may be going on. But there are these patterns. So one of them, for example, is that the person who has ADD is what I call consistently inconsistent because of the ADHD symptoms, right? So That is one thing. If you notice somebody who really says, oh, yes, absolutely, I want to go do something, and then they can't do it for some reason, or they forget, or they get distracted, and that seems to happen over and over again, that's an indication that ADHD might be present. I mean, most of the people who probably are listening to this know whether or not there's ADD in the relationship. 90% of adults who have ADD are currently undiagnosed. So many of the people that, you know, don't know. Then there's a sort of chronic distractibility, and that plays out in terms of how the couple relates to each other and whether they're paying enough attention to each other. And there are sort of wars over who's doing what chores and imbalance. So there are interesting things there. And then one of the other dead giveaways, actually, is the changeover from the time when you were courting or dating to when you're actually in the relationship. So you move from a very hyper-focused period into a very low attention period.
So I once had somebody describe, and tell me if you think this is right, describe this to me. They said that when you first start to date someone who has ADHD, it's really exciting. They're very creative. They're very hyper-focused on you. Everything's about you. And then as time wears on and you get engaged or you're going to get married, you end up kind of taking care of that person. It's like a kind of a little bit of a role reversal in terms of that person isn't emotionally individuated, and so they look to the other person in the relationship to kind of take care of them. Have you seen that?
Yeah, and that's an interesting way, actually, to talk about it. So the hyper-focused courtship phase, I mean, I loved, you know, there is nothing like dating somebody who's got ADD. It's phenomenal.
Right? I know.
It's really great. Totally hyper-focused on you. I mean, I was just in awe that my husband wanted to go out with me as often as he did. And, you know, he was very intense, and it was fabulous. This is something that actually everybody, whether you have ADD or not, the biology or the physiology of infatuation is that you get lots and lots of extra dopamine in your brain. And so everybody has this for about 20 to 24 months, something like that, and then it wears off. And so what happens after that is that people who don't have ADD go back to sort of a steady state of attention or not, depending upon whether they want to pay attention. And the people who do have ADD go back to their normal state, which is low dopamine, which means a lot less attention. And so suddenly there's this sort of new person in the relationship that maybe hasn't been there before. It's kind of a shock. And also you sort of start going, well, okay, that person's having, they're struggling more. So the high dopamine levels sort of cover up the ADD for a while. And so you're
wow.
energetic and you're creative and you're in, you know, totally into everything, and then suddenly you're inattentive and
yeah.
more sort of self-oriented. And so yeah, and then that you do turn into a sort of, I love the way you say, you know, sort of taking care of your partner, because
right.
actually one of the patterns is just that you see.
Yeah, and that's a very difficult pattern for a lot of people when you feel like you have
yeah.
three kids instead of two.
Yeah,
I've
heard that it's so negative. It's one of the most negative patterns, bar none, and I actually call it parent-child dynamics. Because, and people say, well, why do you do that? That's kind of insulting. I'm like, yeah, exactly. That's exactly the point. You do not want to get into this one. But everybody does. It's one of the singly most common patterns, because the people who don't have ADD, or who are the more organized of the two ADD partners, if you have two people, the human nature thing is to say, oh, well, I can do that. I'll help you out. And then pretty soon all the responsibility is sort of in one person's arena. And
then the resentment builds.
Yeah. Huge anger and resentment, and you don't understand. Again, 90% or more of these couples start out not knowing about the ADHD. You're lucky if you know about the ADHD. really, truly.
Yeah.
And so they have no idea why this is going on and why one partner is saying, oh, yeah, sure, I'll do it, and then not doing it and being inconsistent. And you know, there's a tendency to misinterpret in very negative ways.
And so in your experience, because you've worked with couples for a long time and you went through this yourself as well, what is the rate of being able to put this marriage together? Not even back together, but put it together. Do you see a lot of success with the work that you do?
I see a remarkable amount of success. Some of that is, you know, so it's really hard to judge how successful people can be or can't be by who contacts me, because by the time they're in a bad enough place where they're typing into their Google search engine, you know, my husband's always angry at me or something, you know, whatever it is,
yeah.
however they find me, because they don't know about the ADD lots of times, things are usually in pretty bad shape. But there are some good things that are working in their favor. First of all, one of the big issues is not knowing about the ADD and not treating the ADD. And so when you treat ADD, it's treatable, it's manageable for almost everybody. I mean, depending upon how you organize it, somewhere between 50 and 80% or more of people can really genuinely manage ADHD symptoms. To get them pretty much out of the way, so that's useful. And then
right.
the trick for couples is that you really have to understand what's going on. So in this case, knowledge is genuinely powerful. When you start to interpret the symptoms as symptoms rather than your partner doesn't love you or you know, your partner is a rude person when they interrupt
right.
you, you know, suddenly that is a completely different view of your partner, and that makes all the difference, you know, because these are two people who are involved in this. It's not just one person. It's not just about ADD symptoms, and so understanding how to interpret that stuff is really important.
Right.
So I don't have a specific number, because I don't do a before and after kind of a thing. I mean, among other things, because relationships evolve over time, and you need time to recover from a deep struggle. But I do see a huge proportion of the people, for example, who take my seminar, who come out the other end going, wow, we were completely hopeless. And now we have a much better idea of where we want to go, and we feel great. You know, I mean, they're still struggling.
That's
with
so great.
But
it's so great,
you know,
because, you know, on top of the ADHD symptoms or, you know, the executive function deficits, whatever you want to call them, you know, there's also history of our life that comes into play. And I think with couples, like, you know, I tell people, for example, when I was growing up back in the Stone Age, they didn't know about ADHD, and I was labeled lazy, stupid, and a procrastinator. Well, that didn't sit well for the rest of my life, because it's kind of you end up with that self-fulfilling prophecy. So somebody says something kind of negative to you, it can really set you off. So I'm also adding into, besides the symptoms of inattention, emotional dysregulation, you're also dealing with your past and things that
and
came up.
And again, if you don't know about the ADD, you sort of go, well, maybe they're right. I mean, how come I can't manage to turn my bring my homework into school when after I've done it, you know, or don't remember to copy stuff on the board? Maybe I am stupid, you know. Imagine having a partner, maybe you don't need to imagine this, who also says you're lazy, stupid, and a procrastinator, right? I mean, that's what happens.
Yeah, I don't, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I mean, not right now.
No, in the past, I did. I did have somebody like that in my life, and it was terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrible. And that can be changed dramatically. So I'll give you an example. One of the patterns that I write about in the ADHD effect on marriage is what I call symptom response response. And the way that works is that you'll have an ADHD symptom, which you may or may not recognize as an ADHD symptom, but it's a behavior. So chronic distractibility is the number one symptom of adult ADHD, right? So that symptom. And then the response that the other partner has to chronic distractibility is, gee, I don't think my partner loves me anymore because they're not paying any attention. And so they get depressed or upset or whatever, and they start to be intrusive or needy or something else or angry. And then the ADHD partner, who feels genuine love for their partner and has no idea what's going on, responds to the response by getting angry back or saying, why are you always on my case? Or, you know, of course I love you. What are you talking about? Why are you questioning me? Or whatever. And pretty soon they get in this downward spiral of negative interactions around the two responses. It has, you know, they've forgotten the original symptom, and they're just battling it out over, you know, why do you keep questioning me? Why are you angry?
Wow.
Well, so that's when it's misinterpreted, this sort of symptom response response thing. If you know that, in fact, your partner has a chronic distractibility, which is a symptom of ADHD, instead of getting angry or worrying about whether your partner loves you or something like that, you can say to your partner, gee, you've been very busy this week. I've been feeling like I'd love to see more of you. Let's go out on a date.
Right.
And it's a completely different interaction.
Right. Yeah, which is great.
So that's why...
That's
the whole idea, right?
See, but that's the whole thing, too, that I notice with people that I work with that have ADHD is this lack of ability to communicate intimately. And so much of it stems from, I'll just speak for myself, is through the years what I went through, as my brain was going way too fast, and I couldn't sit down and just have a heart-to-heart conversation because I didn't first ask, is this a good time checking in to talk? I had to blurt out. So I think a good portion of, you know, relationships stems from good communication, poor communication, ability to feel heard or be heard, right? So that's something that I see with people that I work with, is they need work with that intimate communication.
Right. And so, I mean, so there are bunches of different ways to handle that. First of all, if you understand that your partner has ADD and has that thing, you can actually talk about it. You can say, I want to communicate this stuff to you, but I'm sort of impulsive, or it comes out in weird times or whatever. And you know, maybe you can jointly both appreciate the sentiment and also smile at the way that it comes out and when it comes out. But there are also structures that you can use, structured conversations that actually slow conversations down, so that if you have something that's very emotional, you can say, hey, you know what, let's have a learning conversation right now and slow things down, and then you make sure that you're hearing each other appropriately and you each feel heard. So there are ways to slow them down. I mean, I've heard just the opposite as well. I hear what your folks are saying. I also hear ADD people who say the conversation is going way too fast for me because when it gets to be important, my brain, I want to make sure I say it right, and so I have to organize all that stuff in my brain before I say it. And so they're asking for their partners to be patient. You know, they want to be able to say, hold on for a second, let me gather my thoughts, and then contribute once they've done that. And you know, but again, once you know that the ADD is there and you're talking openly and neutrally about it, then you can start to negotiate how these things work for you.
Right.
You know.
Which it's so true, that open communication. So here's another question I have. So there's, you know, clinically three types of ADHD. But when you would pair two people, for example, somebody with hyperactivity, impulsivity, and then that inattentive type, where I see a lot of the inattentive type, highly creative, they can't seem to grab sometimes, like you were just saying, those words that they need to get out in the order they want them to come out. Have you noticed that pairing two people together like that, the hyperactivity, impulsivity, and the inattentive, how would you deal with that as a couple?
Well, I mean, it provides, so every couple has, when you have a two ADD couple, you still have two very different people, right, for a whole variety
right.
of reasons, often but not always gender issues. You have different
yeah.
backgrounds, you have different types of ADD, your brains work differently, and you also often have somebody who has been handling their ADD symptoms for longer. Or, you know, somehow maybe there's a list maker person and then there's a person who's not at all a list maker, or, you know, so you still have to negotiate the differences in the same way that any couple would, and understanding that just because you have ADD you're not the same in that case would really help, I think.
Right.
So again, you still need an open conversation about what do I do best, what are my strengths, what do I expect, what am I hoping for in my relationship. You want to make sure that you are both unique individuals and you're not so tied together that you're codependent. All different, the same kinds of things that any couple would be interested in doing.
Right, and I know that you see a lot of this critical stuff because I run adult support groups for Chad. And a couple of times we'll have a couple show up, you know, because they want to be supportive, which is great, of the person that has ADHD. And then we see things like a lot of criticism that's coming out. And it's all the other person. It's got nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
Which is, you know,
well,
it's difficult.
It is. And the one of the sort of inside jokes in the marriage counseling group, industry, if you want to call it that, is that couples will come to you and inevitably what they're seeking, if you say, what do you want, essentially what they're saying is, fix my partner.
Yeah.
And people always come in saying, fix my partner. They're pointing at each other. You know, the reality is that it takes two people to have a relationship. And it's not about fixing your partner. It's about assessing where the two of you are and fixing yourself so that you can contribute
right.
your best self to your relationship. But the thing about the criticism actually is I think, a really important point, actually, because non-ADD partners often don't realize, actually, how critical they are being of their ADHD partners. And, of course, as you pointed out earlier, because of the way they grew up and people saying, oh, you know, you're lazy, stupid, and a procrastinator, or whatever the
right.
moral diagnosis is that they've made, people with ADHD are particularly sensitive often to that criticism. And so it's a very bad combo.
Yeah.
I'm always interested. I mean, and I did this myself. So one of the reasons that people like my books, I get people saying almost verbatim, you know, were you sitting in my living room? How do you know this stuff? Because I went through all this myself. So I was really tough on my husband. I mean, I will say not proud of it, but, you know, I verbally abused my husband for some number of years, trying to get him to sort of step up and participate more and be more involved. And, of course, the more critical you are, the faster the partner runs in the other direction.
Yeah.
So it's not a good strategy, but it is the strategy. And people just sort of, they go, oh, well, no, I'm just being truthful and straightforward. That's not the case. They're actually genuinely being very critical. There are ways to say the same thing that aren't critical.
And you know, I've read some articles, of course, because I also work with adolescents, and I have parents that come in, and they can be very shaming to their children. And you know, I read this article recently where they were talking about, it's just the worst thing you can do is to criticize ADHD, because it really doesn't change. I think people believe that, you know, if you work harder, if you apply yourself, if you, no, we're just different. We're different thinkers. We learn differently. We do things differently. And criticism to me just adds up to shame. And
yeah.
When you have shame, that's really sad, because you trying to get to that vulnerable side, it's next to impossible. So,
well, there's
criticism doesn't work.
No, and there's this underlying the concept behind criticism is this unspoken idea that if somehow the person isn't aware of it wrong, or that there was a problem or whatever, which is pretty insulting.
I love that.
A lot of times people are very aware, in fact, hyper aware, more aware of, oh, gee, you know, I blew it again, or I'm kind of embarrassed or whatever. So that's not really the issue. The issue is being as supportive as possible, while also when you're in a partnership, being able to make sure that you are able to be who you want to be. So one of the conundrums that non-ADHD partners face is that they interpret being supportive of an ADHD partner as sort of rolling over and lowering their standards. And that's
not
at all what they need to do. What they need to do is understand what their most important values are as people. What are the things you care about the most? And make sure that they themselves are living their lives in line with their own values, and then see what falls out of that. Which is a very different approach. For example, one of the things that I care about, well, it's important to, you know, so one of the things I care about a lot is respect, right? So if I say, well, gee, I care a lot about respect, it's pretty hard for me, if I'm going to say I'm going to live by my own values, to then beat up my partner.
Right.
You can be frustrated, but there should be a respectful way of saying, hey, you know, this pattern has been going on for a while now, and I'm really struggling with it, and I'd really love to talk to you about it and see if there's anything that can be done or how we're going to deal with this. That's a lot different from verbally abusing somebody.
But you see that intimate communication you just used? Mm-hmm. Like, that was powerful. I love that, because that's how I communicate now. I didn't years ago, but I do now. And I just see that I'm so happy that you're there, you're out there, and I can certainly refer people to your seminars, because people just don't talk to each other like that. And
whether you have ADHD or not. If you think, well, so here's one of the issues. You talked about, you know, we're different, and it's not about trying harder. I actually say to people, don't try harder, try differently. Don't, you know, forget about trying harder. Because that's a really hard concept for non-ADD partners to get. Because for a non-ADD partner who doesn't have to struggle with the ADD symptoms, when you try harder, typically you do better. There's a pretty strong correlation, but not always, but usually if you try harder, you know, you'll get further along towards your goal. So that's how they're used to thinking about it. So part of this sort of shaming or reminding or nagging or whatever it is that they're falling into what is their own pattern, which is, well, you know, if I just remind you to try harder and I get you to try harder, you're going to do better. But for somebody with an ADD, that's not it at all. You know, you can try really, really hard, and most people with ADD they're some of the hardest working, hardest trying people I know, actually. But the symptoms get in the way. And so they're inconsistent with, sometimes they're really successful, sometimes they're not, and there's not a correlation. And so when you say to somebody, try harder, it's like, oh, my God, you know, I'm already trying really hard. What are you talking about? Get out of my face.
Exactly. So. Yeah, no, I understand. So here's something else that you had sent me. And what are some of the patterns ADHD symptoms encourage in relationships? That's an interesting question.
So we've been sort of talking about some of them, like the hyper-focused courtship that is directly related
right.
to ADHD. And the symptom response pattern is one. I think it's a very good way to think about the dynamics between two people. Because if you say, okay, so there's this symptom, let's say the symptom is poor memory. And I mean, I've had couples say to me, well, we had this amazing conversation 3 weeks ago, and then we went to talk. It was really moving for me, and it was about something that was deeply important to me emotionally. This is a non-ADD partner speaking. And then she comes back to talk to her partner about it 3 weeks later, and he doesn't remember having the conversation, not only,
oh, no.
you know, what was the part of the conversation that was so important to her. And so, you know, her natural response to that is like, what, you're kidding, you don't love me enough to remember our conversation. But again, if she interprets it correctly, which is he has short-term memory problems and he needs some kind of external structure if it's really important for him to remember it, to be able to trap that somehow so that he can come back to it if he needs to. Or maybe there's some kind of way that the two of them remember together, where her response to that is, oh, you know, gee, it's disappointing that you forgot, but let me remind you of what we talked about, and we can start there and then move forward. So understanding, looking at patterns in your relationship by symptoms and then responses means that you can alter those responses to be more appropriate to the actual situation of having ADHD in the relationship. And that makes a
right.
huge, huge difference. But again,
yeah.
you know, for the non-ADD partners, you know, it's not about lowering your standards, but it is about being realistic about how you need to work together, not what can happen in the relationship. You know, there's no reason that your relationship can't thrive and be fabulous, but how it thrives, you know, if you have to go to your partner and say, hey, you know, I'm feeling kind of lonely, let's go out for a date. If you're expecting your partner to plan all those dates and think of it ahead of time, you're going to probably be disappointed.
Exactly.
know?
Yes, exactly.
So that's some of them. And then there are other, like the chore wars. I haven't talked about the chore wars, but that's a big
What's
pattern.
That?
Where? Well, so when you have the ADHD symptoms sort of unmanaged in the relationship, the inconsistency around responsibilities and doing things tends to result in a wild imbalance of responsibilities. And the non-ADD and more organized ADD partners will take on most, like 95% or more of the household drudgery because it just becomes easier. They use
right.
the logic of, It's easier for me to do it myself. I'm just going to do it myself. But then they become really resentful and angry. And so they keep pushing their partner to get more involved. But without, you know, again, people who have ADD, you know this because this is what you do, need to have structures in place to be able to be organized enough, reminder systems and whatever they use, lists or alarms or whatever
right.
the thing is. And then, and so there becomes this big war over whether or not the ADD partner is contributing enough, and it's a real problem for couples sometimes.
Well, you know, the other thing too that I notice is it's everybody. You just said this. You know, everybody has different strengths, and I believe that. For me, I have strengths that I can get things done in a certain way, and my husband can do other things. I think that building on those strengths and just appreciating, see, we go back to respect again, which I love, is appreciating, you know, when my husband works from home. So when I come home and he's accomplished things that we've talked about, I will say, gee, I so appreciate you getting these things done. That means so much to me that you were able to get those done and you followed through on that. And for me, the same thing, because we both have ADHD. But it's that respect. It's that working on strengths. And, you know, I go back to kids again, where instead of focusing on the negatives, how about we focus on the positives and what they do well? Well, isn't that the same thing for adults? I mean, we all don't. Whether you have ADHD or not, do we all do everything perfectly? No.
No, absolutely
so,
not, of course.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so you make a good point. And, in fact, one of the problems when you get into these chore wars and the parent dynamics, and there's so much anger and resentment that burbles around all the time in their relationship, that not only will people not say, gee, thank you so much, I'm so delighted you did X, Y, Z, I'll say, gee, you should say thank you to your partner. And they say, why should I say thank you to my partner? Why should I have to say thank you if they're doing something that they ought to be doing anyway? And my response to that is, because you can, because you're married to them, because everybody likes to be appreciated, and wouldn't you like to be appreciated as well? You know, they start keeping score, essentially. You know, well, my partner doesn't notice when I do stuff, so why should I notice when they do stuff? Oh, yeah, because you can and because you want the relationship to thrive is the answer to
That's
that.
That's exactly right, yes. Whatever the relationship is, right? I mean, it's even... A mother, daughter, a son, mother, father, whatever. You respect. I mean, I love the fact that you use that word because it, to me, it's one of the most important words on the planet. Is that we can respect each other for, you know, everything that we do or don't do. You know, we have weaknesses too. We can respect people for weaknesses as well. It just.
Yeah, and or at least laugh about them. I mean, You have to. Why not? I mean, I agree with you 100%. You need to be thinking about what are the strengths that people contribute. You run into this a little bit. I run into a little bit in the gender arena, actually, particularly when I see that there is an ADD woman married to a non-ADD man, and the woman is not working. And I've seen quite a few of these pairings where the man is like, what are you doing all day? How come how come dinner's not made
home
or whatever? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I try to say to these partners who are outside the home, first of all, the home is a very unstructured environment. It's not amazingly ADD friendly if you have to create the structure yourself. But also, look at what else your partner is doing. So I'm talking to a man recently who said, well, actually, so she volunteers at the local hospice, and she has been very involved with our kids, and she's been doing this and that. She volunteers on this. And it turned out that she had these incredibly meaningful things that she was also doing, contributing to the community. And he just was thinking about something completely different. And I said, stop measuring her on is dinner on the table at 6, and start measuring her on the way she impacts people's lives around her.
Wow, that's
and
amazing.
So that's her strength, as it turns out, not getting dinner on the table at 6. And as he started thinking about it, she is pretty amazing. I need to refocus what I'm thinking about there. So it can also be, related not just to the ADD stuff.
No, but I thought that was really nice the way you just put that, because it's true. Look what she's doing. You know, it's not just about laundry or, you know, putting dinner on the table. I mean, my second husband, who was diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, so that was fun. He would come down in the morning and smack me upside the head and basically say, take your happy pills, because, you know, morning time for people with ADHD, I mean, it's much better for me now because I've done a lot of work on myself in the past 8 years, so I'm in a much better place. But back when my kids were young and I got up in the morning and I was depressed and didn't know that, I would stand at the pantry door and kind of look at the food and try to figure out, okay, why am I here? I mean, seriously, that's what I was doing. So to me, that was verbal abuse, what was happening. And, you know, I'm saying this because for people who are listening, we have to understand that we take things on in life because we feel we deserve them, and we don't. And whether you have ADHD or you have bipolar disorder or you have no mental disorder at all, you don't deserve to be spoken to that way.
No, that's absolutely true.
That was a horrible experience for me and took me a long time to recognize exactly what was going on. But I see a lot of people in the world that I work in, I'm sure you do too, where a lot of this stuff goes on, and it's unacceptable.
Yeah, it goes both ways. I mean, I see a lot of partners who are negatively impacted by their ADHD partner's emotional lability, their trigger, anger, and stuff like that. And I see a lot of ADD partners who are negatively impacted by sort of nagging and chronic criticism, what Ned Hallowell calls the constant critique. and if those things are going on in your relationship, it does not mean that your relationship is doomed, but it does mean that your relationship needs some very significant readjustment so that you can live together with the kind of warmth and affection and respect that each person deserves. So
that you have with your husband and you worked on to get to that place. I just want people to understand that we get, because I've been here, you get to that place with ADHD in your life sometimes where you feel less than. And actually, I see it as a gift because we're all such creative, out-of-the-box thinkers. I know there are negative symptoms attached to it, but I want people to understand that it's not something that you have to suffer through. You don't have to listen to somebody else berating you. And it goes the other way. You're absolutely right. It could be the other way. So for anybody who's listening, that's not the way life needs to be. You know, looking to people like yourself for help is the way to go. And if that isn't the answer, if that doesn't work for you, then you need to move on. But I'm coming back full circle to that word respect, and it's so important in all kinds of relationships.
Well, people ask me, how do I know when to give up? Because a lot of these relationships have struggled for a long time, my husband and I included.
Yeah.
We struggled for many years, and there are a lot of pressures, particularly when you have young children. Who are, you know, sort of a logistical nightmare for people who have ADD or partners who don't have ADD but who are trying to rely on people who have ADD and who haven't really gotten that under control yet. But I forgot where I was going with that. Oh, that's funny.
That's okay. You don't have ADHD?
I don't have ADD, but I forgot
That's so
where I
funny.
Was going.
I love it.
I got off on a little sideline there, all right, you know.
No, I think we were talking about, like, when to end the relationship.
Oh, yes. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
And what I tell people is that I believe that that there's a lot going on that can be changed, and I see it all the time. I see couples who are actually physically separated who get back together, and you know, once they figure out that this is not what they thought it was exactly. But you have, I think it's really important for each person to try really hard to contribute their best self, and to me that means somebody who's respectful, somebody who's kind and generous, and somebody who has their anger under control, who's not, you know, not verbally abusing their partner, all that stuff. And you have a responsibility to contribute that person to your relationship, regardless of what your partner is doing towards you. Because lots of times the sort of high intensity of these relationships has to do with the interactions between the two people as much as who they are as individuals. So you contribute your best self. And at some point you come to understand, and you sort of know this inside yourself, whether or not your partner is capable of being a good partner to you. And you sort of know that when you get to that point, is that person doing their best and contributing their best self, and it's still somebody I'm not interested in? Or by both challenging yourselves to do that, do you find the people that you fell in love with? I mean, that's sort of what my husband and I did, is that we really genuinely thought we were pretty, you know, we both loved the other person a lot, and then we got very warped by these patterns. And we kept saying, we ought to be able to do better than this. What's going on? You know, we can't figure it out. And then when we finally straightened it out, it was like going back to who we had fallen in love with. And you know, we could let go of the bad stuff that happened.
How were you able to get back there?
Well, it was a lot of work. So my husband does manage his ADHD. I mean, he still has it. You never don't have it. He manages it well, and particularly in the areas that were hardest for me, which was he had a sort of an impulsive, unpredictable, what I call spurts of anger that I could never figure out what were coming. And also, he was not as attentive to me as he needed to be, and he could be he had some verbal responses to my verbal issues. I contributed being I nagged a lot. I was sort of the family organizer, and I tried to organize him and tell him how he should live his life, and you know, tried to get him to do all the stuff. It was all the classic patterns. So what we did was we taught ourselves not to do that stuff anymore. I don't organize him anymore. He's his own guy. He can do what he wants to do. And I make a big point of making sure he knows how much I care about him, and he makes special time for me. We have freedom now because we're empty nesters to go do some traveling, which we love to do. And
that's great.
You know, so we've really fixed everything up, but it was a lot of work, and that's why I'm in this field, is because
it's so great. It's such a great story because you can say to people, look, this worked for me. I mean, if you're willing.
But I think that actually that giving hope to people is part of what happens when they hear my story.
Yes.
But not everybody makes it for
no,
a whole variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's too much damage. I mean, one of the things that has been helpful is that my personal philosophy is that you've done the best that you can do at the time you were doing it. So particularly before you know about ADD, you're doing the best you can do, and you're responding in these incredibly predictable ways, which are really negative. And at some point you have to forgive yourself for that. You know, I did verbally abuse my husband. I admit it. I'm willing to talk about it on air. But that was all I could figure out what to do. It wasn't because I didn't love him. It was because I was misguided, and now I know better.
Was there also a level of frustration for you during that time with him?
We had all of the classic. I mean, I joke, we were completely average. We had all the classic symptoms. I mean, I absolutely parented him. He was the child in the relationship, and he's a very, very intelligent man, very successful, and so to be the child in our relationship was emasculating. I mean, it was terrible for him. And so he was chronically angry at me for treating him the way I was treating him. I was chronically angry at him for ignoring me and treating me poorly back, and it was just awful. It was terrible. You know, but we sort of looked at that. We both said, well, but, you know, there's a reason why we fell in love, and we ought to be able to do better than this. What's going on? You know, so that was
right.
Sort of the beginning of the search.
And you did, which is just incredible. It speaks to the two of you and how strong you were and the love for each other, because you were able to come through that.
Yeah. Yeah,
with
no,
a lot
that's
of work.
True. I mean, and I see, I have stopped. So I've been working with couples for close to 10 years now. And
wow.
I have stopped trying to predict which ones are going to be successful, even with as much as I know and how many I've seen, because you just don't know. Some people have this completely covered over core of love, and as soon as you sort of give it a little bit of air, a little bit of sunshine, it pops back up and they like take off. And other couples where you think, oh, they ought to be able to do this, are so entrenched in their behaviors, the negative, the parent-child stuff and whatever, they can't let it go. And if you can't let that stuff go, you will fail.
Yeah. So I have a question for you, because I have one person that I'm working with. And so what do you do with something like this? So this is a person who is a highly successful entrepreneur, very successful at business. And when it comes to ADHD, of course he has ADHD, but he seems to have it under control in the business world. Then he comes home, and things just absolutely fall apart, and he's emotionally dysregulated as well. So they're both struggling. I am not seeing them as a couple. That's not my thing. So they're going to somebody else to work with them. But I'm wondering, have you seen this where, I'm sure you have, and what is your, for people who are listening who most likely could be in this kind of situation, what would be your advice and how would you handle that huge dichotomy between how things go at work and then they come home and it's like, what? You want me to do what? Anything? I mean,
you see
what I'm saying? What would you say about that?
Well, so I do see this with some regularity. And so there are a few things that, they both people in the couple would need to understand. First of all, in the business world, there's a known hierarchy. You know, he's a very successful entrepreneur. There's also a structure in which he can show his greatest strengths. So that's a, you know, people can do his organizing work for him, and he can be the idea person. And all of the positivity of that environment all are very good for him and reinforce the positive and et cetera. That's a very different environment from the home environment. In the home environment, there is not, there isn't supposed to be a known hierarchy where he's at the top. It's supposed to be a balance between the two of them. And there is no known structure unless somebody creates it. Probably not his strong point, but he also isn't probably going to want to be structured by his wife, partner, person.
No. So
that's a, there's a natural, very, very big difference between a work situation and a home situation. So he needs to make sure he's not coming home saying, well, if I'm successful at work, that means it's not me, it's you that is the problem, and pointing at the wife.
Oh, that's very good.
So that's one of the things that happens is you have to have that conversation. So that there's not blame. And what you understand is it's just that it's a different situation. And they need to figure out what the skill set is that they need. And then the emotional dysregulation is very destructive at home, less destructive in a work environment where people are paid to work for you and they have to put up with it.
Right.
But at home, not so much. So, again,
right.
it behooves him to say, well, you know, it may work okay at work because of the structure of work and the fact that those guys work for me, but my wife doesn't work for me. And for me to be emotionally dysregulated, angry or volatile or whatever that looks like for him, is not okay. So there is a sort of a bottom line that makes you a decent partner. And he has to at least be hitting that bottom line, which is, in my mind, respectful and thoughtful, you know, in whatever way looks, you know, he looks thoughtful, and enough attention so the person knows that you care about them. And if he's not doing those three things, then it behooves him to focus on himself, not on his wife, to make sure that he's getting to that bottom line. And then above that, that's where you build the close connections and the affection and the intimacy and all of that. But it is each partner's responsibility to get to that place.
That's really
same thing for her,
really
by the
good.
Way. So she's going to have the same issues where if they're really struggling, she's probably also not hitting that bottom line in the way that ideally she'd like to. So they both have work to do, but on themselves and not on the partner so much.
See, I like the way you say that because that's what everybody needs to do is work on themselves and not try to fix other people. They need to work on themselves. So here's another one.
Over.
This is a big one. What?
It's the only
thing
you have control
you
over. You can't control your partner, right? So
no,
it doesn't
that's
make
exactly
sense to
right.
work on your partner.
Right. Exactly. So here's a big one. This is something that comes up a lot for me working with people. So I have a client that comes in, and they need to go get medication. Okay. And so they bring their wife in to session to talk about going, who do they go to. You know, I, of course, have referrals to people and all that. The wives or the husbands now, I have seen a lot of this wanting to go with them, which you could say, okay, I understand that. But for a lot of people, it's a turnoff. It's like, I can handle this. I can go and do this on my own. How do you navigate that with a couple? What would be your suggestion?
So there are a couple of different things. First of all, I think you to try to be empathetic to both points of view. So this is
right.
some of the parenting behavior that is happening. It's very useful in the diagnostic process, at least, to have a partner who can give another point of view about what's going on, because
I agree.
There's research which suggests people with ADD aren't as good at self-recognition as they can be, and so that's useful for getting the right diagnosis. So at that step, you want your partner along, as well as evaluating whether meds are working. But beyond that, it's the ADD partner's business. But you have to understand that the reason the partner wants to go along is because there's been this inconsistency, and what they're concerned about is that the partner won't talk about what's really going on in an accurate way, or that they won't actually make the appointment, and it has a direct impact on them. So their lives are harder when their ADHD partner isn't doing optimizing his or her treatment. So you can, if you think about it that way, you can say, well, I have empathy to where I can understand why this partner wants to go along and sort of keep an eyeball on things because it impacts them. But nonetheless, I spend a fair amount of time with non-ADD partners saying you gotta step back and be appropriately involved, which means helping evaluate what's working and what's not working as you observe, and not be in the middle of it. My husband is a perfect example. He started taking the medication that he takes, and he couldn't feel it working at all. And so he'd say, "Oh, you know, I don't think the medication is working." And I'm like, "What? Are you kidding?" Oh yeah, it's working. You know, and it's perfect, right? Because he can't feel it working, but it's making a big difference. It's the perfect medication.
That's
it's
great.
A good example of, you know, why you have to have more than one person evaluating it.
I just, you know, it's interesting because I just see a lot of angst going on in that world. And I agree with you because I see self-awareness at being at an all-time low sometimes with people who have ADHD.
Yeah.
And that's why I usually give a questionnaire to them and ask them to get a significant whoever to fill out the other one without looking at it so that they can kind of see, well, if they say you're a 9 in procrastination and you say you're a 2, there's a problem here. But I think that what you're saying is very, very true, that we need sometimes that extra set of ears to come along. But again, what I'm seeing is a lot of that fighting back and forth of, you know, I can do this on my own, when really they do need some of that help, you know. And again,
we
come down to respect.
Yeah, and they do need the help, but you can offer the help in lots of ways, as you say, that are respectful and that are useful and that don't step over the boundaries. I mean, when you're in the parent-child thing, the assumption is that the parent person is sort of somehow more authoritative or more in charge. And the reality is it's the person with the ADD who understands how their body feels, understands what they're doing. I mean, treatment is much broader than medication, and this is another thing to talk about.
Yes.
But, you know, part of it with medication is the stakes feel very high. If you think that medication is sort of the only thing that's going to work, then no wonder you're like, I got to go. And I do think that there is a role, but it's a role of somebody who's there as a helper, not as a person instructing or being the judger or evaluator of whether you should do something or not.
Yeah, and it's maybe, too, the way they word it, you know,
is
there something I can do to help you with this? You know,
right.
I
get the question. I often have somebody who has an ADD partner who's having trouble getting organized to make the evaluative appointment. And they say, I know you say I shouldn't be involved in my husband's medical stuff, but how do I handle this? And for that one, I'll say, look, you know, you got the ADD symptoms in the way of getting you to get an evaluation about having ADD. So there, let them borrow your executive functioning, and for sure, go help if they want. You say, can I help you with making the first appointment? And if they're ready to go for that appointment, they'll usually say, oh, yeah, that'd be great. And then they can go off and do it and start to get the help they need. And you can back away over time to make sure you're not too involved. I mean, what you would hate to hear is, oh, you know what? You forgot to take out the trash again. You need to up your meds. You do not want those kinds of conversations going on.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So let's talk about optimizing ADHD treatment, because as you just said, it certainly is not just about the meds.
No. No, it's not. In fact, there was some research in 2014 which suggested, this was with kids, but it suggested that low doses of medication plus behavioral therapy was mm-hmm. a much more powerful combination than medication alone, behavioral therapy alone, or higher doses of medication plus behavioral therapy,
right.
Which is an interesting finding. I look at it in a way that reflects that I work with couples. I look at it as a three-legged stool of treatment. So the first leg is the physiological leg. That includes all of the treatments that actually impact your brain and how your brain functions and the physiology of ADHD, that they deal with dopamine and the other brain neurochemicals that ADHD is involved with. And then the second leg is, for the ADHD partner, it's behavioral changes that person makes to become more organized, less distracted, able to remember better. It's the sort of structures. A lot of that it has to do with coaching and et cetera. And
mm-hmm.
then the third leg of treatment for me is the interactive stuff. So if you think back to the symptom response stuff, there, dealing with your ADHD effectively takes two people because there's a response going on. And so
right.
there, it's what couples learn together to be able to better integrate the ADHD into their lives. So for me, treatment is multidimensional, and you have to have some treatments in all three of those legs, and you should try to have as many treatments in all three of those legs as you can. Ari Tuchman recently did some research that suggests that folks who have multiple treatments going on for their ADD tend to feel that those treatments are more successful, that they're doing better at managing their ADD. And that fits exactly with what I see with the people that
wow.
I work with. So I, you know, I say, look, medication is one of those leg one physiological
No, I agree, yeah.
But there's also
yeah.
exercise. There is
yeah.
sleep. All those are yeah. in leg one. And then leg two is all of the things, the reminders and the charts and
yeah.
the whiteboards and, you know, all that stuff that you do to get yourself so that you function in a way that works for you
yeah,
and helps you be more reliable. That is the point in a relationship, to be
right.
able to be reliable enough. And then leg
exactly,
three is
and especially if you're a parent, too, because,
yeah.
you know. Yeah,
well, and, you know,
very
with
important.
Parents... So, it's very interesting to watch. I mean, for you mentioned earlier, when you're dealing with kids who have ADHD, you want your home to be a safe space for those kids as they go out in the world and have to deal with
yep.
All the nasty stuff they have to deal with other people who don't get it.
Right.
And you also want to help them be self-reliant enough so that they understand, you know, When we were working with my daughter, I would say, you know, you have ADHD. Everybody's got strengths and weaknesses. You have a mind that works a certain way, and sometimes it'll get in your way, and sometimes it'll be fabulous, and sometimes it'll be a pain. But you can't change the fact that you have it. You can just figure out how to live with it. But it isn't about who you are as a person. You're an amazing person.
Right.
You just sometimes get distracted.
Right.
And we actually found out about her ADD from a math learning disability that she has. And she has trouble doing calculations. It's a learning disability called dyscalculia.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
So we did some role-playing, and when she was in fourth grade, the kids say, how come you can't multiply 4 times 5? And she'd say, well, you know, my brain doesn't do that very well, but I'm really creative. I'm a great artist.
Oh.
You know. And it's that
That's
kind
so great.
Of understanding what you do really well. That's so useful.
See, and that's the most important thing to me is that you have a daughter who's creative. I have two sons who are creative, 28 and 25, and, you know, I was diagnosed after they were diagnosed. That's usually how it works. But, you know, I always taught them how to embrace their ADHD because I believe, like I said before, that it's a gift. I know that there are negative symptoms attached to it, but let's stay on the positive. And would there be a Hollywood if there wasn't for ADHD? No, there wouldn't be, because those are the people over there who have it. And, you know, there's so many people that have been very successful, and they've come up with different things and worked with different people and taken medication and done the things they need to do to be successful. But, you know, there's a lot of different aspects of this, and relationships have never been easy, I know, for me in my life. I talking to somebody this morning who I'm working with who loves drama, and that's part of our world. We tend to, I don't anymore, I run from it, but most of my life was, I loved drama. It was like I would seek it out because it would just make me feel better. It would make me feel happy, and, you know, so I thought. It was not true, but it's the way I thought. So
stimulation.
There's just so many positive aspects to this that I can't look at it as a death.
Yeah, I mean, so again, when people come to me, there are two people in the relationship, and it's pretty hard by the time your relationship is really on the rocks to be saying, well, this is this is a gift.
Yes.
Ned Howell likes to say it's a gift that's hard to unwrap. And so that might be one way of looking at it. I mean, I do think there are some very positive things. One of the, my daughter, for example, she's very curious, right? So that's one of the side effects. Distractibility and curiosity are tightly linked.
Right.
Pretty much the same thing. and so she would go, in college, she'd go into the library and she would start her research paper, and then she'd see something really cool, and she'd follow that for a while, and then she'd see something else. It took her three times longer than everybody else to do her research papers. She was always in a library. But the other side of that is that now in her current job, people in her office come to her for little facts and stuff because she knows something about everything.
You see?
She's been out there looking at it for so long. And, you know, it's kind of the office joke. Oh, just go ask Katrina. You know, she'll know.
You see, I mean, I see it as a gift because we're out of the box thinkers. We're different thinkers. We don't think the same way. There's a gentleman who came to speak at CHAD last year. His name is Dr. Siggy Hale, and he's a great guy. He's a neuroscientist from UCLA. And he and I spent some time talking while I was helping him set up for the talk. And he was bringing up about how one of the things that he's been working on is a different type of education. Because, you know, he grew up with a brother who has ADHD. And he watched his brother struggle dramatically in school in that Puritan type of setting where we all have to sit in the same seat and we all have to pay attention the same way. And, you know, that's just very difficult for us to learn that way. And he was actually talking about how they're coming up with ways where kids can actually step inside what they make out to be a cell, you know, like the kinesthetic and all that stuff. That's just so important for our children as they're growing up to learn a different way because we're alternative learners. We don't all learn the same way, but that's okay. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I think it is. And so one of the issues when you're with the, you know, when you're in relationships is trying to get people to realize that, I mean, when you don't have ADD and you haven't ever lived in that world before, and you don't really have any familiarity with that kind of sort of flexibility and creativity and whatever, however else you want to call it. One of the challenges is looking at your own impressions of what would my relationship look like? What's the perfect relationship? And you have all these views based upon your own life experiences that often don't fit very well with the life experiences of a person with ADD. I mean, you know, I have learned to be much more. I mean, I'm a creative person as well as I'm sort of a mix of creative and logical.
Which is great.
But I have learned a lot of ability. I've learned a lot of, I'm also a manager sort of by nature, and I have learned not to manage people. because it just doesn't work well when you're, you know, and so it's you have to learn to do things differently when you are out. I'm outside, you know, my marriage was, as it turned out, sort of outside of my comfort zone. It didn't end up being what I expected, and I had to relearn a lot of stuff.
Right.
And that's good to be able to do that.
It is good. I mean, I think, you know, we grow developmentally to the day we die. So we learn things, we can learn something new every day. Let me ask you a question. Did you know that your husband had ADHD when you married him?
No. Okay. Again, you know, I was completely average. The vast majority of people don't know at all. I mean, we got married quite a while ago, and people weren't thinking about adult ADD then at all. And you know, we didn't figure out our daughter had ADD until we went in. The math learning disability was incredibly obvious. By second grade, it was clear that there was something there that was, she was trying so hard and she just couldn't add, subtract. And so we took her in and the doctor said, oh yeah, and by the way, she also has ADD. I'm like, oh, okay, we had no idea. And it was a long time after that and before I finally said to one of her doctors, you know, is there any chance that my husband has ADD too? Because a lot of this stuff just seems so familiar. She's like, well, yeah, of course he does. You know, and I was like, what, really? Why didn't somebody tell me about this? We could have been working on this for the last 7 or 8 years or whatever.
That's so funny.
Yeah, but it is your way of finding. You find out when your kids get diagnosed. That's a lot of when you find out. And people are used to saying, oh, well, this is the way I am, which is true to a degree. I mean, I think of people as core people plus symptoms. So
yes.
I don't equate the symptoms as being a core characteristic of the person who has the ADD. I think the core characteristics are, you know, who are you, creative? How do you think? What kind, you know, are you kind?
Right.
Are you
right? That's
ethical?
That's why I call it a gift. I mean, because I know what you're just saying about how people are so frustrated when they come into you because they're couples and they're dealing. But when you live it every day, like I live it, and now that I've been able to take the black veil of all the negative symptoms and just be able to live life in a creative way, I see how powerful that gift can be. And I know that you have to get in control of those symptoms and do the things you need to do. But it really is an amazing thing. It truly is. And some of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life are people that have ADHD because they're such fascinating people to talk to and listen to.
Well,
and they're,
I'm quite
so
confident
creative.
That I fell in love with my husband because he has ADD. He is very interesting.
Yeah.
And he's got a mind that works at a million miles an hour. Which, I mean, you go into his office, he's got about 8 or 10 monitors. I mean, this is how his brain goes. It's unbelievable. I couldn't possibly sit
no.
at that
yeah.
And,
yeah.
and think straight because that just isn't the way my brain works.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there are a lot of awfully interested people. I see the side of it where there are people who are really genuinely struggling.
Trying to
figure out how to get that under control so that it's not the symptoms that are running their lives, but rather that the good core person can show through again, and the symptoms are sort of off to the side. It's not that they're not there. You have to actively manage them, but they're not the thing that's in control.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, which I know can be very, very sad because I work with people every day who struggle with it, but I do think that the way you approach it, if you approach it from a positive side, you can do this. I mean, I've done it, so I know that you can get better. I know you can.
Yeah.
And not only medication. It's a lot of other pieces. It really is.
You have positioned yourself in a very good situation, it sounds like, in terms of your career and your partner and you know, all of those good things. And I think that is important. One of the risks this is a dilemma. I'm agreeing with you, by the way, that it can be a very good thing. One of the risks, though, is that if you're in a partnership that's struggling, if either partner says, tough luck, I am who I am, take me as I am, in other words, stays in denial that they need to make changes to make the relationship work, then the relationship won't work. And so one of the factors for people who say, well, ADD is a gift, is that you might go to your partner and say, well, ADD is a gift. I don't need to do anything different. You're the problem because you're angry all the time.
When right.
Reality
right.
is
But that's absolutely not what I'm saying, because I know that there needs to be a lot of work that people have to do to get better. This is a gift when you do the work to get better. This is not a gift when you're struggling the way I see people struggling. I get that. But I'm trying, I guess I try to come at this from the positive side. So much of it is because I work a lot with teenagers, and I really like to stay in that positive place with them. Because, you know, that dopamine level that you talked about before, you know, in my own family, my older son struggled with alcoholism, and so much of it is because that dopamine level is so low. And, you know, I see these kids, and they're not doing well in school, or they're struggling. I'm trying to look at all the positive. Let's get that creative connection to life going so that we can feel good about ourselves. I mean, that to me is so important, because I don't want to see them end up on the other side, which is
what I hear you saying is that you help them search for the part of them that they can connect into, like my daughter did, where she said, my brain doesn't do well, but it does that really well. The thing that they can connect into so that they understand that they have value and that this, you know, that they should pursue those elements rather than buying into somebody else's opinion of where they should be going or what they should be doing or who they are.
Exactly.
Good advice.
Because it's really sad, again, not across the board, but a lot of what I see happening in schools, there's very little understanding of what this is all about and how being positive, just taking that, you know, few extra minutes to be positive can change a day for a child versus,
hugely.
You know, a negative thing. So,
So
I wanted to talk again a little bit about can couples, because this is the last thing on your list, can couples really find the love they thought they had lost amidst all the anger and frustration they currently feel?
Yeah, so, I mean, our conversation tips my hand in that one, which is yes, absolutely. I mean, I've seen over and over again that once couples learn about the what I call the ADHD effect, that they can do what each one of them needs to do to work on their own issues, you know, so you can move away from being a parent figure, you can move away from nagging, you can move away from the constant critique. At the same time, the ADHD partner can do the three legs of treatment, a very broad way of looking at changing the interactions with the partner, making sure you have the right support structures in place so that the ADD becomes much less obvious in the relationship, and that you are exercising regularly and getting good sleep, and those kinds of things that are really important to being your best self. So there are many things that couples can do, and knowledge is really, it's really power to know how to respond to those symptoms and for both people so that it becomes a neutral issue. I mean, it's a hot button issue. Well, your ADD is the problem. No, your anger is the problem. And then when you turn it into, well, there's ADD here and we both have things we need to work on, that's a very different conversation. So there are lots of things you can do, and couples absolutely can turn things around and do turn things around. I love doing what I do for that reason, because it's like,
which is great.
Yeah,
which is
really
great.
Nice.
It must be so gratifying to you when you see people that their marriage is saved and things are so much better. And I'm sure you probably hear from people after you've worked the seminar.
Yeah. People do follow up with me, and I hear both sides of the story. Again, not everybody is able to turn things around, but a remarkable number are, and it becomes, it's wonderful. I was in a completely different field before I got into this. And,
oh, really?
And I liked it. Oh, yeah. No, I did something totally different. And I started to do this as a, I started out just as a passion, you know. When I started writing my blog, it was just because I really felt it was important to share the information. I didn't have the idea of doing it as my work. I just wanted to share.
Wow.
It's wonderful to be doing work that actually helps families stay together and couples stay together, and it's amazing. So I feel blessed.
Yes, it really is, and you've changed a lot of lives through your books and your seminars, and so again, do you travel or people call into you? Is that how this works with the seminars?
So the seminars are by conference call, and you can go onto my website see. So the seminar, the main seminar, the sort of basic, this is what you need to know seminars, is called the ADHD Effect In-Depth. That's on my website at ADHDmarriage.com. And I also am about to release a second seminar called Recovering Intimacy in Your Relationship, for couples who have calmed their relationship down and who are trying to be closer, more intimate across all the things. And so that's a self-study course, and that'll be released sometime in the next month or two, hopefully sooner.
Oh, that sounds very exciting.
Yeah, I'm very excited about the information, actually. It's taking me longer to put it together because I keep getting further into it and going, oh, no, wait, I have to talk about that. And it's pretty good stuff. So those are available. I also have a treatment guide that is part of the second book, but I give it as two free chapters on my website. So for people who are interested in this idea about the three legs of treatment and what the latest on adult treatment of adult ADHD is, that's free. You can download it at the site.
That's great.
There's a forum with people. So there's a lot of different stuff. But I give the courses by phone or their self-study. I do speak sometimes, in different places. I'm in the process of setting up a seminar with the CHAD chapter in New York City for April.
Oh, do you ever come out? Do you ever come out to LA? Because if you do, we'd love to have you come and speak at our chapter.
Well, I may be coming out for CHAD. We'll see. I did submit some proposals to do
For the CHAD meeting, for the conference.
Mm-hmm. Which is in L.A.
Yeah, in November.
I've spoken at it a couple of years previously. I didn't speak this last year, but I have spoken before. So we'll see if they want to invite me out. So I may be out then. And travel.
I'll come and see you if you're going to be there. Absolutely.
Yeah, that would be great.
I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. This was a really great show. So much wonderful information, and I know that people will definitely contact you because I myself have a lot of people who are really in need of help in their relationships, and you seem to be the go-to person for this. So I'm so glad that I got to meet you and got to spend some time with you, and hopefully we can get you back on at some point when you start with that new seminar about intimacy. I think that would be great.
No, thanks. I thoroughly enjoyed talking to you, and I look forward to helping whoever needs the help. So,
thank you.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Thank you so much, and have a great night.
You too.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today and listening to the show. We're going to be back next week. I believe we're going to be talking about TMS, transcranial magneticing system, which is wherein you can't take psychotropic medications. They're beginning to use magnets to move around the chemicals in the brain related to bipolar depression, OCD, and I believe they're going to start very soon with ADHD. So I hope all of you would join us next Sunday again. I really want to thank Melissa. This was a great show, and I want all of you to remember tonight to just stay in the moment. Have a great night.